Welcome to Unfiltered Studios, your one-stop destination for a diverse range of podcasts that cater to every interest. Join St. Joe on Nailed It as he explores the fascinating times of the 80s and 90s. Find solace in the advice of a mother on Petals of Support. Dive deep into intriguing interviews on The Sleevey G Show. Catch up with the latest in sports on Unfiltered Sports Weekly. Connect with your spiritual side on Finding Your Way. Achieve mental wellness with Hypno-Wellness. Never forget the history of everyday items with The Stupid History Minute. Understand how we've become the people we are today on How to Be Less of an Asshole. And gather with fellow movie enthusiasts on Movie Lovers Unite. Your journey into the world of podcasts begins here at Unfiltered Studios. Subscribe now and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com for more information.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. Today, I actually have a very special guest with me. I have my friend Tamiko here with me. We're going to be reviewing Home Alone scene by scene. And let's go on ahead. Let's do this. I'm excited to be able to do this review for Home Alone. So without further ado, let's do it. How you doing, Tamiko?
Hey, what's going on? I got mesmerized by the popcorn falling out of the sky.
Everybody enjoys that little intro music. So, I'm just happy that you do.
Make it rain.
I'm making it rain popcorn, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I do. So gather around and get your popcorn, large popcorn refills. And let's go on ahead. Let's review some Home Alone. So this movie came out in the 1900s.
Gen Z audience,
right? But no. Okay. So my question for you is: when was like the very first time you've seen Home Alone?
Oh man, I wish I saw it in theaters. I don't think I've seen it. Took years and years after.
Oh wow! I didn't know that you didn't see this in theaters or anything.
No, I didn't see either one in theaters. I always saw them on video cassette, VHS,
yeah.
The ancient block that goes into
in the 1900s.
The 1900s tape block. It goes into this device called a VCR. I only saw it through that, but I've always been in tune with Home Alone. Like
me too.
Just the sayings, stuff like that.
Exactly. You see, I've actually seen it twice in theaters as a kid.
Nice.
Yeah, I've seen it once with a couple of friends, plus my mom and everything. And then my grandfather came down from Boston for Christmas, I think, or something like that. And we went to see Home Alone. So it was twice in the theaters, and then the rest was on VHS. And I still love this movie. It's not Christmas unless you watch Home Alone, Home Alone 2, and The Santa Claus for me.
And Die Hard. You forgot Die Hard.
And Die Hard.
Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Yeah.
And Die Hard 2 is also a Christmas movie.
Okay, sure.
We're not even getting into that discussion. Anyways.
I didn't say anything.
So we're going to dive right into this. So hey there, get your booby traps and holiday hijinks Sully and Nando's. Welcome to another wild ride with us. And in today's episode, we're strapping on our aftershave, dodging paint cans, and diving headfirst into the hilarious chaos that is known as Home Alone. That's right. We're talking about a kid who puts the fun in home dysfunction. So go on ahead, get your booby traps, and let's go on ahead and go for this ride.
Oh, my gosh. It's such a nerd.
I am what I am, and I'm proud of who I am. I am a nerd and proud.
Got it, Papa.
Scene one, McAllister's house. McAllister family prepares to spend Christmas with Peter and Frank's brother, Rob, in Paris, France. They gather at Peter and his wife, Kate's home in Chicago. The night before, their first 8-year-old, Kevin, Peter and Kate's youngest son finds himself the subject of a ridiculous but by his cousins and siblings. So they are subject to ridicule him. But here's the thing. This whole entire scene is just perfect because of the fact that you have all this chaos going around, and then you see Joe Pesci as the police officer who's observing all this. And he's like, son, is there a parent around? No, they're in Paris. What about you? No, there was no parents here. Great. So a house full of orphans. Okay. So I just thought it was kind of funny that you have Joe Pesci in a kids type movie when we're known for Goodfellas. You're known for all this other rated R stuff, and he can't even cuss in this movie.
No. I think I saw something about that on, wasn't it The Movies That Made Us on Netflix? Yep. They went through something like that. And he, all the things he said, like freaking how he got it out of his system to cuss.
But I just like how the house is all in chaos, though. I mean, what about for you?
I do have to ask, why isn't anyone suspicious about a cop that's just randomly in your house?
Well, he did say that he was checking in on the neighborhood, making sure everything was okay, making sure everybody else is safe.
Yeah, I know, but why is he in my house? Like,
he's making sure everybody's safe, Tamika.
I guess that's okay. I don't know.
You don't want a cop knowing that you're okay or not, you know? You know?
Let's not get into that question.
Right. But you know cops. What, though? he does look like an odd one out, though, especially when Kevin looks at him and he has, like, that gold tooth shining. Kevin kind of knows. Wonders if there's like something off about him.
Yeah, he looks kind of shady, I guess. Okay, so I can play devil's advocate. Okay, so the parents are just like all over the place. They're trying to get everybody packed. Right. I guess he knocked on the door and the kid was like, oh, okay, come in, whatever. So I guess he was there. I guess that's like an authority figure of safety. That's why they didn't really question, why is this cop in my house?
Right. On, of all days, when he's checking on people, you know what I mean? Just randomly just checking on people.
I just thought about, why is he in that house, like, as an adult? Like, as a kid, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. You know, cops in your house, make sure you're okay.
For me, it makes sense, but...
The gold tooth doesn't make any sense, though. That's shady.
No, that is shady, though, to be honest with you, especially when you notice that, hey, this guy has a gold tooth that's capped. So, you know, something has to be off with him.
Yes.
You know?
Is that Pesci's real gold tooth, or was that for the character?
I think that was just for the character.
Okay.
But, so, anyways, we go over to...
That's a whole show on the gold tooth. The gold tooth cop, the pirate cop. Yeah.
But I also want to mention this, though. I like how Mr. McAllister comes down, and then you also see the pizza delivery guy and everything, wondering where the tip is, wondering where the money is for the pizza. You also have... you have two people in that house. You have the pizza delivery guy, and you also have the police officer in this house.
Yeah, and a serial killer to make it three.
Right.
You know, they don't lock their doors. That's the queen. They got the pizza guy in there. He could be a serial killer. The cop, which we found out, he's a burglar. So you got all these people in your house, and you just like, oh, hey, what's going on? Oh, yeah.
We're leaving for Paris.
Yeah, we're leaving for Paris. Let me open my wallet.
You can tell that these people are definitely rich and have money. Oh, we're leaving to go to Paris.
Paris. Oh, yeah. Tip. Okay, I mean, open my wallet and expose all my credit cards and cards. Money.
Also, Tony Soprano sponsored that trip.
You know what? You're gonna stop right there. You and Reddit need to stop with this theory.
It's factual. Tony Soprano bought the tickets for Paris, and then they all went under Tony's name.
Well, explain the theory for the audience that doesn't know what you're talking about.
In other words, as kids, we're always we take things for a grain of salt. We're like, we don't care about the house or anything like that. All we care about is Kevin. And so the theory is that the father worked for Tony Soprano, and he was part of the mob, and that's how he was able to afford the house.
Because the actor who plays the father was in The Sopranos.
Right,
and
exactly.
He actually was a crooked cop.
Right.
That worked for Tony Soprano.
Isn't it ironic that he's a crooked cop talking to another crooked cop? Just kidding.
Ooh, but, yeah.
But anyways.
Another rabbit hole theory.
Right. So, you know, they're just telling him, hey, we're going to Paris. And I'm thinking to myself, would I tell a police officer that we're going to Paris?
Yeah, at that, okay, so we put ourselves in the 1900s and 90s. At that time period, yes. Because you trust the cops.
Right, you trust the cops.
Trust the authority figure. And he's like, hey, you want to make sure your house is safe? And like, yeah, I'm going to Paris. You're going to watch my house? Yeah.
Right, and then after that, you have the mother coming down there, paying for the pizza, gives the tip, and then next thing you know, they leave. And then this is also where we have Kevin. He goes to his older brother, Buzz, to ask him if he can sleep in his room for the night because he knows that his little cousin, Fuller, will wet the bed that they will be sharing. Disappointed for even asking, Bud replies, I wouldn't let you sleep in my room if you were growing on my ass.
Oh my gosh, who wrote this movie? Because they did a good job on the dialogue of how kids talk to one another.
Oh, Derpy Entertainment says, my question is how the father was able to afford that house in Chicago with that big family.
Well, the family was visiting. I already said it.
Tony Soprano bought the house. He bought this place to make
He's probably an investment banker or something. I'm assuming he's like investment banker or something in sales.
Right. But, you know, I think that we don't even focus on what the husband does or anything. 90s cocaine.
Yeah.
I love it, Derpy. Well, I love it.
Yeah, investment bankers. Yeah, that makes sense.
But, you know, that's my guess.
That's a good guess. But,
yeah, that is a very good guess. I do appreciate that, Derpy.
He was messing with his nose.
You were mentioning the dialogue about how the kids bounce off of each other. Mm-hmm. I thought that they did a very good job of depicting the kids. And again, this is also part of John Hughes. And John Hughes is good at writing for kids. And he understands kids. And Christopher Columbus is the one who actually put this movie out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have that flow to it. It has that Chicago vibe to it and things like that, too. So, yeah, it definitely does make sense about how great the dialogue is because of John Hughes. And, you know, I really like the whole entire encounter where basically you have Buzz over there trying to feed his tarantula. Then you have Kevin who comes in there and goes, hey Buzz, can I go on ahead and sleep in your room since my cousin pisses on the bed? I don't want to be in that in the bed with him. And then that thing says that line. Let's see. Nobody can deny every time you watch the movie, you want pizza.
You know what? Every time I see that movie, I was like, I want a cheese pizza for no reason at all.
You know what, though? I found myself, like, even as a kid, like, I was like, I want Pizza Hut right now.
Yeah.
Back in the 90s, that's what I wanted. I wanted Pizza Hut.
Mm-hmm. That's
this is a great marketing campaign for Pizza Hut, but instead it was for American Airlines.
No, they had Pizza Hut in the film.
No. What I was going to say was this, okay? On the VHS tape itself,
there was an
American Airline commercial that was featured on the VHS tape. And this was sponsored by American Airlines so people can fly on Christmas.
Wow. Oh, man. Oh, now I wish I had that VHS.
It's just something that stuck with me. I don't know why. But anyways, but, you know, that whole entire encounter with Buzz winds up telling him that. And then, you know, then everybody has that one neighbor that people makes up stories about, you know, in the neighborhood.
Yes.
And so it's this old man who's actually the subject. All he's doing is taking out the trash. And it's old man Marley. He's self Ben Shovel Slayer, who is rumored to have murdered his family and half of the people on the block in 1958. Todd asks why the police didn't arrest him, and Buzz tells him the police have never found the bodies, and that he salts the neighborhood sidewalks with the remains of the victims, adding that the salt turns the bodies into mummies. This frightens Kevin. but, like I said, this is a perfect way of having like an urban legend to scare your little brother and to be afraid of this man who's just not minding his own business, taking out the trash and people making up rumors about it. It's just small town suburbia, basically.
Yes, but in today's day and age, you would believe that story.
Oh my God. But yeah. So I thought that was actually let's see, a Derpy. He says same goes for the mac and cheese that was perfectly. You know what though? Mm-hmm. I was actually wanting, that's another thing. Even whenever I seen this movie in the 90s, I wanted mac and cheese.
I just wanted pizza and Pepsi.
You see, you wanted simple. I wanted both. Is this just too much to ask for both?
I wanted pizza, Pepsi, and ice cream.
Dang, okay. You went all out. You got a stomach ache. That's what you got. But so after that happens, during dinner, Buzz shoves plain cheese pizza into his mouth. Kevin looks for cheese pizza, his favorite. And when he does not see any, he asked if anyone ordered some. Buzz responds that it will have all eaten and he would have to throw it up on to give Kevin any. This annoys Kevin and he sees Fuller smirking at him when he drinks a can of Pepsi, knowing Fuller is deliberately doing this to pee on him while sleeping. Kevin is angered further. Buzz then begins to feign throwing up, asking for a plate from Kevin, angry that Buzz ate his plain cheese pizza. Kevin snaps and pushes Buzz back, which causes Buzz to accidentally spill milk on the airline tickets and passports.
I would do the same thing. I'm sick of his shit.
To be honest with you, you have these two. You have the cousin who's a piece of crap. Mm-hmm. You also have the brother that's also a piece of crap.
Yes.
So yeah, I would definitely try to shove Buzz because he's like the closest person to me. Mm-hmm. Just to basically stop being a piece of shit.
Yeah. First he ate my pizza, right? And then he's gonna like, oh, I'm gonna throw it up for you. Okay, well let me help you throw up then. I'm gonna push your insides out, you know. And then you got this pissy boy over here that's drinking Pepsi and they keep telling him the rubber sheets are packed and he just keep drinking. I've had it. I had it with his family.
Right? And I don't blame him. I would be tired of them too because they're all taking Buzz's side. No one's taking Kevin's side on anything. No. He's just getting shoved around everywhere. Nobody wants anything to do with him. Mm-hmm. So he's like, you know what? Screw this. I'm done with this whole entire thing. I don't care about my pizza anymore. My pizza night got ruined by Buzz. So why should I even care?
Yeah. And then earlier they say he was a disease. Les incompetent. All kind of names they call him earlier. His uncle is an asshole, a cheap one at that.
He's a freeloader.
Yeah. So you got all this stuff packed on his, what is he about? What do you think, like 7?
Yeah, he's about 7, maybe 8 years old.
Seven-year-old kid. And then my dumbass brother wants to throw up pizza in my face. No, I've had it.
No, that's not happening.
I'm snapping.
And I agree with Derpy, though. This sounds like a parent control problem with the drinking.
They got I definitely agree. Yeah, they're too self-absorbed. They got all these kids, and they just thinking about the trip. They're not thinking
that's
about...
That's all they care about.
Yeah, kids.
They care about the adult kids, the young adult kids. But they don't give two craps about Kevin, and they don't care about this little kid who can't even hold his own piss in to save his life.
No, I mean I don't have children, so I'm just speaking from that experience. But
like I have a 10-year-old, and if he had a wet bed problem, or whatever, he would not be drinking Pepsi before going to bed or anything.
I just think these parents are okay. Devil's advocate, maybe they just got like a lot going on and they're trying to keep it together for the trip, so they just miss all these little details. But getting out of devil's advocate, no.
Right. But here's the thing though. Devil's advocate would be this. You have a small house. Let's say, for instance, that you have like a two-bedroom house, a three-bedroom house, and you have all these people in this house. Yeah, you have a problem. Yeah, you're stressed out. You're trying to concentrate on the trip while also trying to concentrate on all these people. You have this huge ass house to fill all these people, all these family members. So, you know, there's nothing really to be stressed out about other than the fact that your house is packed out with with everybody, you know? What do you think?
I'll read the comment. But yeah, they just got chaos in the house and they don't know, they don't have a moment to themselves to think, okay, let me calm down, let me get somewhere where I can think, okay, what's going on? Okay, the kids need to be fed. Da, da, da. And then the adults aren't helping them. The adults are just in the chaos. They're just laying around
rapid.
Yeah, the adults in the chaos too. So you got no parental supervision. And then you got all these kids running around because there's no parent to just lay the law down and say, look, this is what we're going to do. You know?
Right, exactly. And then Derby says, to make it good, no offense today, John, I wouldn't want to be one. It seems too easy today. It's actually hard today.
Oh, parent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But okay, so Peter also knocks over a full open bottle of Pepsi onto the pizza and Frank's pants pants in Fuller's head to get pinned between the chair. Like, this is what I'm happy about. I'm glad the little piss ain't got stuck between the chair and the wall and infatuated a Kate, breaks up the fight between Buzz and Kevin and demands Kevin to explain his behavior. He replies that it's Buzz's fault for eating the whole plain cheese pizza on purpose, then begins ranting on how he hates sausage, olives, onions, and similar toppings. Kevin is interrupted by Uncle Frank, who shouts, "Look at what you did, you little jerk!" This causes Kevin to notice his family glaring at him for the mess. Kate sternly drags Kevin out of the kitchen after Jeff calls him such a disease and pays the pizza boy. Oh, nice. You call Kevin a piece of shit, basically, and then pays the guy, and then briefly speaks with the questionable officer of their vacation before taking Kevin upstairs before leaving. So, okay, the officer tells her that he has already spoken to the husband and that his home is in good hands. So you're having dinner while the pizza guy is there.
Yeah.
And while the officer is there.
Yes. I just thought about it.
And you already talked to the husband.
Yeah.
You should actually be leaving out at that time.
I just thought about that. I forgot all about them. Forgot they were still in the house. I was like, oh. And then when it went to the next scene, I was like, oh, okay, they're just there.
Right. And that is an awkward situation, Derpy. I definitely agree. And, you know, you have Kevin, who's going to get grounded now. And it's just going to be a chaotic mess and everything. And you have the delivery guy there. You also have the fake officer there watching all this go down and stuff. It's just a bad situation.
One can say that this explains the comfort of suburb. Like, you're so comfortable that there's strangers in your home and you left the door open. But then you're in this euphoric state where you're like, oh, I'm gonna just have a meal with my family, and then there's strangers in my home.
Still in your house.
Yeah.
Waiting about 20 minutes for that pizza guy trying to leave to go to his next order, and here you are slowing him down.
Yeah.
You're not the only person on the block, people, that have pizza.
You can write a paper, a book, a whatever. You can have a whole class on this whole family.
What not to do.
I want to see a psychologist break this family down.
Me too. I would love to see that. You know what, though? I would actually, if there's actually a YouTube channel that does that, I would definitely be in on that.
I totally would. Do it, everybody. Somebody do it.
But, okay, so you have Kevin, then you have Uncle Frank goes, look what you did, you little jerk.
Yeah,
first of all, you don't even live anywhere. I cannot stand Frank. Even in the second movie, I did not like Frank.
First off, why am I letting him call my son a jerk? Like, why am I letting this adult, I know he's family, but why am I letting him talk down to my son?
Exactly. If that was my mom, she wouldn't, first of all, my ass would be in trouble for doing what I did. But number two, Frank's ass would have been in trouble though too.
Oh yeah, Frank would have got cussed out along with me.
Mm-hmm. He wouldn't even be going on the trip,
right? Yeah, look what you did, you little jerk. Like,
let's see here. Derpy says, easiest paycheck ever for Joe Pesci. Only hard part was not swearing. Yep, that's right. We covered that a little while ago, too.
It's hard.
And then this is also another thing that Kate says. Kate angrily informs Kevin that there are 15 people in the house, and he is the only one who has to make trouble. With Kevin replying that he is the only one who's getting dumped on, which is true, Kate tells him that he's the only one who's acting up as she leads Kevin to the third floor bedroom, which in reality is the attic playroom of the house. Kevin apologizes and begs his mother not to send him up there. Acknowledgingly, Fuller will wet his bed. While Kate agrees to move Fuller somewhere else to sleep, she rejects his apology and sends him upstairs. Regardless, Kevin angrily tells Kate that everybody in the family hates him, so Kate sarcastically suggests asking Santa Claus for a new one. When Kevin says that he doesn't want a family, a frustrated Kate wishes to not see him again for the rest of the night, but Kevin angrily wishes to not see her or anybody else again for the rest of his life. Hurt and stunned, Kate resorts that he'll feel sad and lonely without a family, but Kevin denies it. Kate firmly warns Kevin that it might happen if he says it again, only for him to yell that he never wants to see them again, wishing that they would all disappear while lying on the bed.
Wow, that's a deep scene. When you're describing it that way, I'm like, wow, yeah.
It's cuts you. If you're a parent, that should cut you. Mm-hmm. in your heart and pierced you in your heart to know that you're allowing these people to hurt Kevin the way they are. And to know that he doesn't want anything to do with his family because of the way that they're doing things, you know? And yeah. It's just sad to see that. And especially when the little, I know that we keep on mentioning the little saying that can't hold his pee in.
He got issues. They need to look into that.
Yeah. While you're over there fussing with Kevin and everything, you need to look at him because he has to go. He might be going through some anxiety issues himself.
Isn't Frank his dad, right? Who's his dad?
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's why he pissed in the bed. If that right. was my dad, imagine what he called him. He called
that's
Kevin
true.
What did he call the little boy?
Exactly. But is there anything else that you wanted to add to that, though, as far as, or are you good?
When they cleaned up the, because milk spilled, remember? Mm-hmm. And then Kevin's ticket was on the table, and then they swiped it in the trash can. And there's tons of Reddit theories about how the dad intentionally put it in the trash can, his airplane ticket, so that he wouldn't be able to go with them.
It's like, okay, so you wish us that we weren't going to be here? No problem. You don't have to go with us. Okay.
Damn kids.
I'll show you. But no,
put your ticket in the trash.
Some of these theories are way far out there and way too far-fetched. They're fun to read, but it's like you said, it's going down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, it is.
You know? Derby says he prefers the Lost in New York over the first film. The first one seems too slow for him. Get this, though. I like the slow build of it, though, to get us to where we are. Because of the fact that you need to be introduced to the family. Because if you don't be introduced to the family, you don't understand what Kevin is going.
Yeah.
And then you also don't understand why he's by himself. Yeah, they could have just went on ahead the next day. They could have shown everybody leaving for Paris, showing the Joe Pesci being there in the house, and then they all leave for Paris, right? That could have been the scene, and then it goes into him being home alone by himself.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that they took their time to get to know these characters, because there's so many characters that within the Home Alone, the very first Home Alone movie, to the point where you have to introduce it into this kind of context.
You have to introduce that chaos, because then it's relatable that there are parents out there that are like, you know what, I almost left my child to, you know, maybe like right. all that chaos of if you have this big family and then you're all trying to pack for a vacation, and maybe that's relatable, you know, to just right. have all the people in your house, not the police that's standing there. I hope that's not relatable.
No, but then, like I said, once you get to know these characters, you're ready to go. It doesn't slow down after this. But during the night, high winds pick up. Now, this is actually for the family departure and Kevin is left alone. But during the night, high winds pick up, causing a tree branch to fall over and land on an electricity wire, resulting in a power failure. The next morning, when Kate taps the alarm clock, which is flashing 12 o'clock, she picks up her watch to check the time, discovering that they slept in. Family desperately rushes to pack their stuff to catch the vans that will take them to the airport. Mitch Murphy, a neighbor across the street, is mistakenly counted in a head count, and the family hastily departs to the airport. Now, how do you mistaken that kid for Kevin?
Okay, so the other Reddit theory is... Well, somebody commented that, why would you leave head counting to a child? I know she was like a teenager. But,
yeah, she was a teenager.
Know, teenagers, no offense, teenagers. But it's like, whatever, 1, 2, oh, 3, 4. Okay, I counted everybody, you know.
We're good to go.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, one of those adults should have been down there counting. Like, the adults should have had a meeting somewhere before all these children and said, okay, you count the kids, okay, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that. Of course, Frank wouldn't have done it. He just wants a free trip, so Frank is for himself.
Exactly. He's like, screw these kids, screw everything, I got a free trip out of this, so I don't care about what happens.
I ain't paying for no pizza, and I ain't paying for no trip.
Exactly. And so, I just don't get.
I do want to say, so back then, I'm assuming that airport vans could pick you up from your house and take you to the
beyond. Okay, so get this. My aunt actually got picked up by a van from the airport and brought her all the way to our house.
Whoa.
All the way to my mom's house.
Dang, that's cool.
That part is true.
Yeah.
And then there was another thing too, like in New Orleans airport, there was a thing called the Coastliner, for example, but with what they would do is you got a ride from them, and then they would bring you over to the Motel 6 to get picked up by one of your family members.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they don't have those services anymore, but that's still cool. No,
yeah, but I don't know what company it is that my aunt used, but you pay about $400 to the person, and they'll take you exactly to the location of where your family is.
Mm, cool.
Without having to have bother your family members to pick you up at the airport.
That is pretty cool. Like, I just thought about that because they were there to pick them up, drive them all the way to the airport, like an airport shuttle service or something. So, yeah, I mean, we have Uber now, but it's still
pretty back in those cool days, though, there was no Uber. Either it was like the airline's going to try and pick you up, which is going to cost you a lot more extra money to do that if they did that, especially in Chicago, you're talking about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a lot more expensive to do that in Chicago.
They got money.
Yep. Even though they're flying coach.
Yeah. The kids were in coach, remember?
That's right. They were.
Kids were in coach. The adults were in first class.
Okay. Right. And the uncle should have went into coach.
Yeah. He told me, I said, put these forks in your purse. Is this real China? Put it in your purse.
Right. So Kevin wakes up to find the house empty as the family's flight takes off. Upon realizing he is home alone, he is overjoyed to find that his wish came true and begins doing whatever he wants, such as jumping on his parents' bed and getting to Buzz's belongings, including his BB gun. He then eats junk food and watches Angels with Filthy Souls, a film that he was prohibited from watching the night before by Uncle Frank. However, the film's shooting scene ultimately startles him that he pauses the movie and calls for his mother.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I all of those things are relatable. Like being what do they used to call it? Latchkey kids? Like those kids that I was one of those kids where I would get let out of school and then my mom would put the key underneath the doormat and then I would just be home by myself until she gets off from work.
Right.
I don't know what they call those kids, but anyway, that was kind of... You called to help me out.
I was basically doing the same thing though. I would actually be by myself. And yeah, I would act, even though I was allowed to watch anything I want, but it was the whole fact that I had the house to myself. So therefore, I'm going to do everything that I wasn't supposed to do.
Yeah, this is just a roundabout way of me saying that, yes, it's very relatable what Kevin was doing.
Like, definitely very relatable.
I eat whatever I want to eat. I watch movies I'm not supposed to watch. Oh no, I'm scared. Where's my mom? You know,
right? And there's also that one part where he goes in the same scene. He goes, "Hey, mom, I'm eating junk food. Somebody stop me." Remember?
Yeah. And he was in his brother's stuff, looking at Playboy. He's like, "Ugh, these people don't have clothes on. Filthy."
And then he looks at Buzz's girlfriend.
Yeah. Whoa. Oh my God. Ooh.
And then he's shooting around his baby gun and shooting Michael Jordan, Larry Bird down the laundry chute.
Terrible. Yeah. All in the house. Yes.
Very I don't know if I would go to that extreme to get a BB gun and shoot stuff.
I never had a BB gun, but if I did, either. I probably would be shooting stuff.
Okay. I feel you.
Well, all right, Tanika. That's something new about you. I didn't know.
He's packing heat. But just a little fun fact. Angels with Filthy Souls. I tried looking for that film back when I was on Google. Back before the movies that made us told me that it was just specifically made for that film.
You're not the only one. Because people probably was like, man, it's a good film. See, they need the whole spinoff on just that. Because I need to know more about Frank and AC and all these characters within the movie.
Let's see. So then Kevin is missing. Trouble in Paris. During the flight, a sleeping Kate wakes up. Worried that the family has forgotten something, she asks Peter if they turned off the coffee machine, locked the doors, and close the garage. Peter admits that he did forget to close the garage because remember, Kevin did go outside to look and the cars were there. He goes, wait, the cars are still there. So there's no way they could have went to the airport if their cars are there. And then that's when he comes to the realization. He goes, oh, I wish my parents disappeared. I made my parents disappear. And then he does like that.
Yeah.
Kind of look.
Yeah.
but I would think that he would also know that the people from the airport was going to pick him up.
Well, you know how kids are. They don't pay attention to details.
That's true. That's very true.
She probably said, hey, dude, you know, they're going to pick us up. And he's like, cheese pizza.
You know, we all do that, though. We're like, did I lock the door? Did I shut the garage door down? Did I do this or that? Did I leave the oven on? We all go through that little checklist and everything. And so everybody's guilty of leaving something behind or on. You can relate to that part, but yeah, not forgetting your kid. Right.
I never left a person behind.
Me either.
While I'm in first class, you know, put on my lipstick, I'm like missing something. Is it my Versace watch? No. Oh, okay. What is it? What did I miss? A child, you know.
Well, Kate also, however, thinks it's something else they forgot. Then after Peter asks what they possibly could have forgotten, Kate finally realizes what they have left behind. Meanwhile, Kevin slids down the stairs in his home and out on the front door. After the realization, Kate is comforted by the family, who offers nothing that soothes her guilt consciousness. Kate realizes what kind of terrible mother she is.
I'm not going to call her terrible.
I have it in my notes. She's terrible.
Well, you got to blame the dad, too, because he's horrible.
True.
Because he's like, okay. And then the uncle is like, you know, I forgot my recess. I'm like, wow. That's why your son be peeing in the bed. That response told me everything I need to know about him being a dad.
Right? It's like, nah, we didn't forget anything. We're good. All good to go to Paris. That's all I care about. I don't care about nothing.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Else.
If he forgot Fuller and this movie was about them, I guarantee you Frank would be like, he's fine. Let's just keep going.
Exactly. I'm here for my free trip. I don't care about my free son. Trip.
No, he's fine. He got rubber sheets. He's good.
He's got newspapers on the bed. He's good to go.
That's exactly his response. I put newspapers down. Like he's a dog. Poor Fuller.
Right. Let's talk about Kevin sledding down the banister with the sled.
Yes, excellent.
Funny, though, where you actually have Kevin. While the mother is panicking, he's over there taking the sled out, opens the door, slides out of the house with the sled, and goes off the stoop. If it snowed, I would definitely be doing this.
Did he close the door?
No, he didn't.
Did he go back in?
He went back in because remember, if you look when.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking like he went to the store. No. Okay. Not after that.
He probably pissed his pants like Fuller did, but.
Yeah. How many kids have done that? Oh, I'm going to do just like Kevin did at Home Alone, slide down these steps and then they broke their arm.
I would like to know that though, too, because especially in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. They did all those antics he did.
Like, okay, well, we're going to get our helmet, our knee pads.
No, they said he didn't have any. Why
no,
should I?
No, yeah. Exactly. You're right. It's going to be verbatim. They're going to go exactly how he would do it.
Yeah, I'm just going to slide down these steps like he did.
You know, I think I would have actually done the same thing, though. I would have, if it snowed, but it doesn't ever snow down here, so there's no purpose of me to have a sled. But I would definitely be trying to slide down the banister.
Atlanta doesn't get snow. It's get, like, flakes.
That's all we get. And frozen water. That's it.
Yeah.
So once the family is in Paris, Kate calls the police in Chicago, and Peter has Peter booked a return flight, and has Frank's wife, her sister-in-law, Leslie, call everyone in Kate's address book. Kate reaches the village police department on the phone and requests them to send someone to check on Kevin and tell them that the family will be returning home. However, the department misunderstands her inquiry at first and finally sends an officer who knocks on the door, but Kevin is too afraid to answer the door. The officer judges that there is nobody home and the house is secure. So let's talk about this, okay?
Yeah,
you're in a panic, and they're acting like this is like a tech support line. Hey, we have a crazy one on line one.
Yeah, yeah, and then she's going over and saying the same thing. They're like, "What you want again?"
Like they were so busy.
That crazy lady's online again.
And yeah, ma'am, we'll send somebody out, no problem. And you can definitely tell this is the police department that doesn't like to do paperwork.
Yeah, how long did it take her to say, I just want somebody to go check on my house because my boy is there alone? She had to say that multiple times. And then they were like, okay, fine. You want somebody to go over there and check to see if your boy is alone, correct? Yes.
Right.
Yeah. The whole, I don't know if John Hughes has realized it, but he did not make Chicago look good.
No, he didn't. Not in
maybe,
that moment.
Maybe that was it, what he was trying to say. He made the police department in Chicago look like buffoons.
By the way, also too, the police officer, the one that's on the phone, mm-hmm. that's actually somebody from Billy Madison.
Really?
Yeah, he was actually the one of the father's friends or something like that, Carl. So he was actually the one who is talking to Kate first, and then after that transfers the call over to the other cop.
Eating a donut, by the way.
Right, eating the donut. There's a lot of eating in this film. But
it is a lot of eating. That's another thing.
Right. But I like how the cop just goes over there, rings the doorbell, and Kevin quickly goes under the bed, doesn't even try to even see who's outside or anything like that either. Then again, I wouldn't either.
I still do that. Even if it's DoorDash, I'm like, oh, just leave it and go away.
But yeah, and then he's just checking the doors and he goes, yep, everything looks good. I don't have to do paperwork now. I can go back doing what I normally do, which is nothing.
Donuts.
Yeah, donuts. Not even donuts in the parking lot. Just eating donuts.
Donuts and coffee.
But Kate and Peter attempt to book a return to flight back to Chicago, but find that everything is booked. He decides to stay at the airport to be on standby in case a seat opens up for the rest of the family. Goes to Rob's house. As the McAllisters watch a French dub of It's a Wonderful Life, Peter tries calling someone on the phone to assist in reaching Kevin while Frank brings out shrimp, ignoring his sister-in-law and Rob's wife, Georgette's call that the shrimp was going to be eaten later. Kevin's sister Megan expresses her worry about Kevin to Buzz, but he insists that their brother will be completely fine. And I like how this is how you know that these people have money.
Yes.
And he lists off everything that they have. We have smoke detectors, we have da-da-da-da, and we live in one of the neighborhoods that doesn't nothing ever happens. And then, yes. Of course, this is also where you have Marv and them breaking into other people's houses.
Exactly. Yes. It is a playground for criminals because, like I said, it's safe suburbia. So you're like, it's boring. Nothing happens here. We can leave our doors unlocked. We can open
exactly.
the windows.
And then I also like how the Christmas lights are illuminating at night and showing the house that's the McAllisters, and that's the house that they want. And I like how Marv is like, voice? Because there's some fine stuff in there. There's some fine stuff in there, Marv. Entertainment systems, jewelry. We're gonna make bank.
Yeah, now that you're mentioning it, what they must have had like a prized possession or something that their house is more desirable than any other house on the
block. Number one, it's a huge house. All the other houses look small in stature, especially that other house that they wind up breaking into. It's not that big.
Okay, yeah.
So they're like, okay, we have this big house. There's a lot more stuff to loot, so therefore we can go on ahead and get save this house for last, because this is going to be the one that we're going to wind up scoring big on. So the web bandits, Marv and Harry, later happening to be supposed to be a police officer, observes the neighborhood playing robberies around the security information Harry has gathered about each home. As Kevin takes a nap, How the Grinch Stole Christmas plays on television, and yeah. Harry and Marv attempts to break in, but Kevin hears them and turns on a light, causing them to flee as he hides under his parents' bed again. So he played that off really well.
That is so scary for a kid.
Like, it really is.
You're home alone and then somebody's trying to break in. Oh my God.
It really is scary for a kid if you think about it, though, because you're used to those sounds. You're used to a doorbell. You're used to people knocking on the door, but you're also used to your parents answering those things so that way you don't have to and you feel safe. But now that he's by himself, all those noises is new to him because he's the one who has to go ahead and answer these things now. And it's new to him.
And it seems like there's nobody else in the neighborhood except the old man shoveling the snow. And him. Everybody's gone on vacation.
Even the family members that they tried calling.
Everybody's on vacation except two people.
And then Frank freeloading off the shrimp too.
He's just being himself. That's all I have to say about Frank. He is being himself. He is not worried. He's going to have his vacation. He got his kids.
Okay. So this is actually my favorite iconic scene. After showering, Kevin uses his father's aftershave and singing Blue, Blue, Blue Christmas. Yeah.
Oh my God.
His father's grooming products. And just like that, I lost about 15,000 audio listeners, including his aftershave, causing Kevin to scream from the burning sensation of and pain. He then goes to Buzz's room and attempts to climb the shelf to reach his life savings, but causes all the shelvings to fall on top of him. While on his walk, Kevin notices the Wet Bandits van in the Murphy driveway and notes that the thought that Murphy's family had gone to Florida. As the burglars raid the Murphy home, they hear a message on their phone from Peter indicating that the McAllisters are not home.
And I've told you my theory about Kevin, like, okay, hear me out, right? So, you know how he's in the mirror and he's just talking about all his products and he's putting it on his face. Who does that remind you of?
Me?
No, Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. If Patrick Bateman was like, oh, I put this on my face, and they both had their hair back. So Kevin grew up to be Patrick Bateman because this trauma of being left has affected him to the point where he became a serial killer. And he's like attacking all these women because he hates his mom. Boom, Jordan. That's my theory.
No.
Now you can't get it out your head. You can't get it out your head. When you show the clip, you put those two clips together.
I'm good. But it does remind me of myself, though, because I did those things where I was actually put on my dad's aftershave as a kid. And Blue Christmas is hands down one of my favorite Christmas songs.
Yeah.
By the same singer. But yeah. So now you have this introduction with Harry and Marv where basically they're robbing the place. He goes, oh, so there's no one over there. Okay. Well, guess what? We're going to go on ahead and try to hit it up again and try to rob them. Marv winds up going on ahead and leaving the water on. He has this little snickering laugh that's with him, though, too. And Harry's just looking at him like, what the hell is so funny? He's like, I love you. He goes, wait, you did it again, didn't you? Yes, we're the Wet Bandits. Everybody leaves their mark. No. That's how you get caught.
Yeah, you just telling the cops, we hit this place, this place, this place, and this place. And think about the water bill. Oh my gosh.
That's what I'm thinking too. Especially when we get to the very end of it, where you have the water tank probably busted or something.
Yeah. Oh.
But Kevin goes to the drugstore to buy a toothbrush and asks if it was approved by the American Dentist Association. As the store staff attempts to confirm, old man Marley enters with a crudely bandaged hand and places it on the counter, causing a frightened Kevin to flee the store and unfortunately shoplifts the toothbrush. A police officer pursues Kevin but loses sight of him at an ice skating rink after being tripped over by a skater with a hockey club. Kevin walks home dismayed by his criminal behavior.
With his little toothbrush. Oh, I'm a criminal. I'm sorry. Oh, that's 79 cents. Oh, I'm a criminal.
Right. What are you in here for, kid? 79 cents?
Yeah. And that's how
I'm going to be going to life in prison.
That's how he became Patrick Bateman.
You just want the light to go.
I'm just going to put that in. Boy, I can get it in.
But I also like how he slides underneath these people in the skating rink to lose the police officer.
Yeah.
He just slides across.
Man, how many kids did that to?
I don't know. I busted my ass on a ice rink before. I'm not about to try to do that.
I don't want to talk about that.
Had a bad experience.
Yeah, I had a terrible experience with terrible people. I don't know. Talk about the ice rink.
Oh, by the way, there's also that other scene where basically Kevin winds up paying for the groceries.
Oh, yeah, that was sometime after, but yeah. And then the cashier was asking him all these questions, and he's like, "I don't talk to strangers.
I don't talk to strangers." Yeah. I like how he puts like the arm in on the escalator on the little turning belt, and he goes, "For the kids."
Yeah, you know, for the kids.
For the kids, and he's reading a magazine too, which makes it look like more like an adult though too, yeah, in a kid's mind.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was funny.
Yeah, he got like milk and eggs and all that other stuff.
Right.
Doing good.
He did really good for the 1900s.
They must have left some money and didn't know that they left money at the house.
But later that night, the burglars arrive outside the McAllister's home, but Kevin has constructed an elaborate silhouette display, making Marv and Harry think that there are people there. Kevin then orders a cheese pizza for himself and directs the pizza boy to the back door as he plays and pauses parts of An Angels with a Filthy Soul, convincing that one of the characters in the film is speaking with with him and eventually is shooting at him, making the pizza boy flee from the property as he settles in for the night. Kevin watches Johnny Carson on television and begins to regret his wish. But I like how you have Rocking Around the Christmas Tree playing, you have the trains going around, and you have Jordan on the train, and he's constructing all this. Make it look like he's, I really loved it. That scene to me is iconic, and it's just funny.
Yeah, that kid should have been like an engineer or something.
Well, you did say he turned into Patrick Bateman.
I was trying not to, but since you brought it up, that yes, this is what Patrick Bateman would have done as a kid.
But I also like how Marv and them are like, well, can't rob the house now. Guess we're going to have to go somewhere else. They're home.
They're having a party in there.
They're having a party. I thought you said that this house was empty. I guess they came home.
That's not weird at all. There's one guy going around in the circle.
He's drunk. That's
right. And it makes me wonder too, like I was talking about earlier, if the parents left money, like did they have a stash they left? And then
no, because remember, he used the stash from Buzz.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So
right.
He used everything out of Buzz's money that he had saved to buy pizza, to buy groceries and stuff. So yeah.
Oh wait, what Buzz get his money? He's selling weed or something?
I don't know, but apparently he's not taking his girlfriend out, so you know.
Yeah, because he wants to know about the French bays or new beaches.
Right, the new beaches. And also too, the pizza boy being freaked out over the shooting and everything, he winds up getting his ass on out of there, especially after he winds up basically Kevin gives him the money and he goes, cheap old man or something like that. He goes, cheapskate.
Yeah,
I'm gonna give you the count of 10 to get your no good yellow tail off my property. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. Oh my God. I so totally want to do that.
But the Johnny Carson thing to me is nostalgic because I used to watch Johnny Carson as a kid.
Me too. Yeah.
So it was good to just see that.
Yeah. But I used to, he used to come on. I used to watch him.
In the morning time, as Kevin readies himself for the day, he lip syncs to the Drifters version of White Christmas and once again screams from his father's aftershave as Buzz's tarantula roams free after escaping as a result of Kevin accidentally breaking the shelving. Kevin goes to the grocery store where he encounters the cashier as he walks home. Grocery bag breaks, so Harry and Marv to check the house. Kevin notices Marv's presence, turns on Angels with Filthy Souls. So my question is this, okay? As kids, we find this funny, right?
Yes.
But as you get older, did you feel like it was a little bit repetitive with it? Or did you find yourself laughing again because of they're using the same bit again?
Oh, yeah. I was laughing. I can't believe people are falling for this.
But this time he does it. He amps it up to a 10 on this one, though.
I would, too.
You're right. I love how he does it.
The house, and then he go back in the van. He's like, oh, they got some guy in there. Some guy called Snakes. He just got blown away.
What? Snakes. I don't know those snakes.
I don't know those snakes.
But he also has, now this is what I like what he does though too. He goes, the sound of gunfire with firecrackers in a pot. And of course this also scares Marv away, and Marv then reports about, but like we said, cutting down the tree. And so this also reminds me of a Charlie Brown thing where Kevin cuts down the tree and realizes that he has been deceiving them. And so this is where Marv and them catches on to Kevin. As Kevin decorates the tree and sees Harry's reflection in the ornament, he begins calling for his father. He opens a window and overhears Marv and Harry planning their break into the McAllister's home at 9 o'clock, making Kevin want his family back. The cutting down the Christmas tree thing reminds me of Charlie Brown's Christmas.
Yeah, that's true.
The way it's done. I love what you mentioned though about the snakes. About snakes. He goes, snakes. I don't know no snakes. I don't know. So Kate eventually reaches Grant Scranton, but all flights of Chicago are unavailable because of an influx of travelers. This desperate return home, she is overheard by Gus Polinski, the polka king of the Midwest.
Polka.
There's also twisted polka.
John Candy. That was
right.
Yeah, one of his last appearances too.
For a John Hughes movie, yeah. Because him and Macaulay Culkin also did Uncle Buck together in the 80s yeah. as well.
Yes. Oh,
and it was also a John Hughes movie.
Oh, that's such
a I love that movie. But Kenosha Kickers, who are driving to Milwaukee after their flight was canceled, he offers to allow her a ride with them in a budget van, dropping her off in Chicago along the way. Kate accepts the offer and rides with a polka band. As the band rehearses, deck the halls in the van, Gus offers to let her play his clarinet, which she refuses.
Yeah, if I had to get back to my son, I would put up with polka.
Me too.
Yeah.
And then, you know what, though? This guy's a total stranger, too, to give her a ride when nobody else was going to give up their plane ticket, especially with that older couple, too. Because I am desperate. I'm a mother. What would you do if you were me? And she was offering earrings, a watch, everything to this one older couple. And the old woman was about to do it. And then the old man stopped her and they went on their airplane. So if it wasn't for John Candy, she wouldn't have made it.
Yeah, that was the good old days when you could do all that stuff. Now you exactly. have to be 10 times more suspicious.
Yes, you do. So friendship, but now we're getting into friendship with Marley and setting the traps. Santa Claus impersonator and requesting he asked for the real Santa to bring his family back instead of his parents. Kevin goes to the church where he sees a local children's choir perform and encounters old man Marley, coming to discover that he is actually a very friendly and kind man and that none of the rumors about him are true. Kevin learns that the real reason the rumors were spread, Marley has been estranged from his son for quite some time, thus separating him from his granddaughter who is singing with the choir. Kevin urges Marley to make amends with his son for Christmas and Marley agrees. I thought this was a very sweet moment of just getting to know the neighbor and realizing, and I like how he said, look, there's a lot of rumors about me, kid, but none of them are true. And it's like, you know, forget about what everybody is saying about me, but this is the who I am. This is the real me. Right. And I like that whole entire thing. And then there's a life lesson learned between Kevin and him. That moment from a kid, from a little small kid, talking to this adult and saying, hey, look, it's not too late to make up with your kid or anything. Give him a call. I'm sure he wants to hear from you. And that scene, the music being played, always makes me want to cry.
Yeah, I'm glad they put that scene in there. It's like a chance to kind of catch your breath and slow down.
Just a little bit.
Just the overall film, to me, it has a good balance because there's like chaos, but then there's like calmness.
Calm before the storm.
And then there's danger lurking around at all corners. You know?
Right.
But then there's safe. So I like the balanced elements that John Hughes put into the film.
Me too. He always has a way of balancing the kids with the adults, though, too.
Yes, he makes the adults look like buffoons, and the kids are really... the heroes of the story.
But what do you think about the Santa Claus, you know?
the one with the broke down car?
The Honda?
Yeah. Oh, man. That's like every average mall Santa.
Yep. But he wasn't even in a mall. He was like in a little Santa village.
He was going to a party, I think, and his car was broke down. And he was smoking his cigarette. He reminded me of Bad Santa. You know, Bad Santa. Yeah. Like, we're not cussing, but, you know, halfway there. Doing Joe Pesci type of cussing because his car won't work and he gotta get across town. But he flicked his cigarette. He's like, oh, kid, what's going on? I know you're not the real Santa. What are you talking about?
What you talking about?
I'm the real Santa.
Here, have these. What's this? Come on, you have to have something. I have to give you something. It's like Tic Tacs. He gives
them. Yeah, Tic Tacs. Yeah.
So after this whole entire thing with Marley, I like how Marley goes, well, you might want to go on ahead and go home and be safe. So as Carol the Bells are going on, the church tower strikes 8. His own spirits lifted by encouraging Marley. Kevin returns home, prepares a series of booby traps, and then the house before 9 p.m. First, he rolls up the doormat, the staircase, placing micro machine cars, trucks, and airplanes on the floor. He continues on by dozing the front steps as well as the outside basement and outside with water, which instantly freezes after hooking a glowing hot barbecue starter onto the doorknob at the front door. Kevin coats the inside basement stairs with tar, leaving the last few steps untouched.
Ooh, the way his mind works. How does one think of all these contraptions?
I don't know, especially in an hour of all this stuff that's about to happen. It's like, I met up with this nice old man named Marley, and Marley told me to be careful, so I'm gonna go on ahead. I'm gonna have myself some mac and cheese. cheese. But first, I need to go on ahead and set up all these traps first before I can eat.
Which is how he turned into Patrick Bateman.
Or Jigsaw from Saw.
Yeah, he could have been Jigsaw too. Yeah.
Right.
I like to inflict pain. Oh, if they slip on these cars, then they'll have pain. Oh, yeah, I like that. Yeah, let me do some more of that.
So outside the basement, stairs outside the water, which is instantly freezes after hooking a glowing hot barbecue starter on the doorknob of the front door, Kevin coats the inside basement stairs with tar, leaving the last few steps untouched, like I mentioned, placing a piece of sandpaper with a long nail into an upward shingle on one of them. Next, he creates an escape route by connecting to a rope from the attic window to a treehouse in the kitchen. He squirts chuckling glue onto the sheet of plastic wrap, then piles a cart high with pillow feathers and electric fan. Oh, then he places glass Christmas ornaments down on the on the floor next to the window. Finally, he grabs two paint cans with ropes tied to them after preparing an iron blowtorch.
Okay, when you think about this as an adult, you're like, this is some sick shit. This is some psychotic stuff going on. This kid got going on. And I don't know how these men, they could have died. What if one of them died?
It's self-defense. It's self-defense and trespassing.
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah, homicide.
But at that moment, though, I could see the police department go, you know, you messed with the wrong house.
Yeah, you did, buddy. Yeah, that's paperwork for us. Or more.
You know, he would be a legend in Chicago. Can you just imagine?
Yes, the legend of Kevin Patrick McAllister.
Jigsaw.
Jigsaw. Yeah, Saw 10. But yeah, my favorite trap, or one of my favorites, was when, I forgot, what was Daniel Stern's character? Marv was coming into the, I don't know why, he was coming into the window, and then he stepped on the glass ornament, which is sick for me to say that's my favorite, right? Because he's getting, his foot is cut.
I thought you were going to tell me your other favorite part was, of course, where he steps on the screw.
That one was like cringe worthy. My other favorite is the paint can that bops him in the face, and then he falls down on the ground floor, whatever. I don't know why. Like, this is off topic, but it's like from Anger Management. Do you remember Jack Nicholson's face?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. When you were doing that, I was like, yes. My other favorite is always Marv / Daniel Stern screaming, especially when spider was on him. And I was like, whoa, that man got decibels.
Yeah, the tarantula on him. Then you also have him falling down where the basement is. Yeah. You also have the paint cans hitting their faces.
Yeah, didn't he get electrocuted in this one, or was it Home Alone 2?
Home Alone 2 is where he gets electrocuted.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yep, which we'll be doing Saturday.
Yeah, which is more sick traps.
That we love. So then like we said, all these traps are going on. Kevin also torments Harry, who then walks into a glue covered plastic wrap and has the feathers blown on him by a fan. We mentioned that. A barefoot Marv enters through a window, stepping on the glass of ornaments with angry, I'm gonna kill you, I'm gonna kill that kid. The burglars join back up again and slip on the micro machines, and then they try chasing Kevin up the stairs, but are struck to the paint cans, one of which knocks out of Harry's gold tooth. Kevin calls the police, reporting a burglary in the Murphy home. The burglars chase him while Harry trips over a wire, knocking him unconscious, and Marv manages to grab Kevin's leg on the attic steps. Kevin grabs Buzz's tarantula axle and puts it on Marv's face, allowing him to escape. Marv screams and throws the tarantula on an unconscious Harry's belly as Kevin ziplines to the treehouse using bike handles. Marv, trying to hit the tarantula, accidentally hits Harry in the chest with his crowbar.
Jeez.
After Harry hits Marv three times with the crowbar, the bandits pursue Kevin again as he reaches the treehouse. They try climbing out of the treehouse, but this is foiled by Kevin cutting the rope with a pair of hedge clippers, causing them to be swung into the side of the house.
They're tenacious, because I'm sure most
persistent
would have just been like, well, forget this. I don't... after the first trap, they're like, it's okay. We're just going to rob somebody else. But notice they didn't have guns. If they had guns, there would have been, this story would have been over with. But these are burglars without guns.
I think everything in this film works. I mean, from all the traps working out the way they do. And I also like how he looks at Harry and goes, why the hell are you dressed like a chicken? Why do you have your shoes off? This was like hands down one of my favorite scenes. When it reminds me of a Scooby Doo. It reminds me of a Scooby Doo cartoon.
All of it was Scooby Doo. I think too. Chris Columbus was saying they wanted like a Looney Tunes feel,
and they definitely pulled it off.
Those stunts open the door to what other stuntmen are doing today. Some kind of way, those stunts were groundbreaking at the time. And then these are the stunts we're seeing now in movies.
Exactly. But yeah, then he winds up, what did you think of the other part where he winds up ziplining himself down to the house and then he cuts the cord and then they bang into the side of the house?
I am just surprised they caught up with him.
Right, we're going to get to that in a minute.
Oh, but yeah, he called the police late. He's like, first, I want to torture them and then I want to see them tortured. And then I called the police with my Patrick Bateman self.
So after all that happens, Kevin winds up going next door. He winds up going through the basement where, of course, with the wet bandits leaving the water on. He goes through the water, and then Marv and Harry meets up with him in the next door neighbors. They put him on the hanging hook where the jackets go, and then they talk about wanting to cut off his fingers and his thumbs, and then that's when you have Marley come in there and slap him upside the head with the shovel, and then Marley takes him off the hook, and takes him back over to his house.
Yeah, he's like, I'm gonna bite your fingers off one by one. I was like, oh geez, that's terrifying. That's one of the most terrifying scenes in the fingers on the boy up, and then they're like about to eat his fingers off. I'm like, oh my god.
That was gruesome.
What kind of film has this become?
It's supposed to be a family film, and here we are.
Yeah, I mean, I can tolerate the torture, but biting somebody's finger.
Now you want to torture a kid. It's okay for us to torture Marv and Harry, but not the kid.
No. That's off limits.
Right. So shortly after Kevin returned home safely, like I mentioned, Harry and Marv are arrested. Additionally, the police have now become aware of every house that the wet bandits have targeted because of Marv's habit of leaving the household's water running as a calling card. Marv tells the police about their crimes, which caused Harry to kick him twice as they got in the police car. Get in the car, Marv. The police car drives. Shut up, Marv.
Yeah.
Kevin sarcastically waves at Harry, who hopes that he and Marv will return one day for revenge. Oh my god, I have that in my notes. I have that part in my notes to make. I hope it reaches for revenge.
Bye, guys.
Every Kevin cleans the remains of the traps and then places some cookies and milk on the table for Santa, as well as carrots for the reindeer, having set up Christmas all by himself. Kate speaks with Gus, guilty of leaving Kevin behind and thinking that she is a bad parent. Gus insists that she is not a bad parent compared to any of his bandmates. He tells a story of living one of his children at a funeral.
I almost forgot that part.
Only John Candy could pull that line off, though.
Okay, go ahead. Tell what happened.
No, you do it.
Wasn't this the one where he said he left his kid in a funeral home for 3 hours?
For 3 hours, and he was surprised that the kid was still there.
He didn't talk for like, I don't know, it's what, like 3 days or something? I don't know.
Something like that. I don't have that part of my notes on how long he was there. I should have put that in there.
That's terrible. That kid ain't gonna be right.
No. And then he even talked about one of his other bandmates from who hasn't seen his kid and lives in Milwaukee. But yeah, and then Christmas Day reclination, Kevin wakes up the next morning, calls for his mother, but is disappointed to find that he is still alone. Kate then arrives with two to reconcile before Peter and Kevin's siblings arrive. Having caught the flight that Kate did not want to wait for, while Kevin's uncle, aunt, and cousins are still in Paris, Buzz becomes glad that Kevin didn't burned the house down. When Kate asks Peter to find an open store to buy some milk, Kevin reveals to them that he had gotten groceries for Christmas, milk, eggs, and fabric softener, but more or less just hung around while his family was away. Kevin does not disclose his encounter with Harry and Marv, but Peter finds Harry's gold tooth on the floor and wonders what it is. Kevin goes over to the window and smiles upon discovering that Marley took his advice and watches as he and his son reunite and reconcile while hugging his granddaughter and daughter-in-law. Marley looks up and sees Kevin smiling and waves to him as a sign of thanking him. And Kevin waves back. Buzz interrupts Kevin's musings by calling, "Kevin, what did you do to my room?" causing Kevin to run off. So there's all that in a nutshell. I really have to say I still enjoyed this movie. This movie still holds up even today, for especially being the 90s. I love this movie.
Yes. And Macaulay Culkin still looks the same because he just got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yes, he does.
Yes. And he has kids. He has sadistic little kids like him. They can leave traps in their house.
Like so her. My other thing, though, too, Tamika, is like, what did you think of the mother coming home and then the music playing? That every single time I just lose it. I want to cry every single time.
Yeah, it's a mood. It's a mood, as the kids say, I think. I don't know. You know, you well up with all these emotions. You're like, oh, they're reunited at last. Yay. My question is, did they ever find out about the wet bandits?
Which I don't think they did. I really don't think they did. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think they ever did. But I'm actually surprised the police did. Well, then again, there's no paperwork because the police don't want to do their job. But
where's John Hughes secretly put in the film?
Yeah, all in all, though, I definitely enjoyed rewatching this again or revisiting it. I definitely enjoy this film. It's now streaming on Disney Plus, and if anybody wants to go ahead and check that out, Tamika and I will be back on Saturday reviewing Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, and that's the only two films in the Home Alone franchise.
We're going to talk about others.
There is no others.
No, my Godfather. There's only one and two.
Exactly.
Yes.
But thank you again, Tamika, for joining me for this. It was fun to review this film.
Yeah, I was. I like it.
Always until next time, guys. Have a great and safe night, and we'll catch you guys on the next one.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows, only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios. We'll help you press record.